Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to the BBLL show featuring NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel. For those of you that might be confused when you see our podcast and Spotify, Audible, all those different things, this is NJ Chat with Nikita and Jewel, and we do a couple of segments. This one is Blurred Words. It's our blurty segment. We're going to have another one coming up soon, and we'll announce that at the time. We do this every Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern time, and we hope you enjoy it. Today's blurty topic is going to be Wednesday, What the Woe, on Netflix. Wednesday was done in 4 episodes. It's actually 8 episodes. The first one is already out and about. And we want you to know, if you're listening to this, at this point, we do spoilers. So turn it off if you don't want to know. But for those of you that haven't seen it, might be curious, what's the draw? What's the attention? What's the goody-goody? And you listen to it, it may make you want to watch it. We sometimes go in depth because we're just that nerdy blurty. And that's just how we roll. I am Nikita. And?
I'm Jewel.
And we are the hosts of Blurred Words, the BBOL show. So welcome, welcome, welcome. And welcome to our guest, Jennifer, who has been with us. She's one of our day ones, and we appreciate her so much and her input because she's just as blurty as we are. So it's a wonderful, beautiful thing. So here we go, Wednesday. Here we woe again. For those of you that are watching Wednesday, you're probably asking yourself, why is woe in everything? Because I asked, I was like, why is all the topics woe for the episodes? Well, it is because Wednesday was named for a nursery rhyme called Monday's Child, which includes the line, Wednesday's child is full of woe. Now, this line is also an inspiration for the character Wednesday Addams' name. So, you know how deeply depressing and gloomy and dark and how she looks at life and all the negativity that she has. That's just a part of her personality. It's actually a perfect name for me. You know, I grew up watching the Addams Family and the Munsters. And, you know, I love what they've done with this series. A lot of people watch the first season and you think everybody made a big deal out of the dance, which was really cool and entertaining. But historically, when we look at this, this brings us back to, you know, our youth, things that we remember from the original Addams Family. And Wednesday was always the precocious child. And so what they have done is, you know, make a spinoff on her character. And I thought it has been brilliantly done. And for this generation and the next generation, I hope they understand the appeal of it and continues with this particular historical series of the Addams Family. We're going to talk about all the characters in this second season, which I think are pretty cool. Look at that. We look at the idea of Wednesday, who is dark and witty and still precocious, with the school kind of puts the audience through the themes of individuality, acceptance, and the struggle of fitting in because they're called outcasts. And a lot of blurs, nerds, we know what that's like, not necessarily fitting in. I love how they did this. I love how they did this with kids in school. And it's the outcast versus the normies. And they have a community where they all fit in. Like I said, there are 4 episodes. And each episode in season 2 starts out with woe in the title again. And it's actually pretty, pretty brilliant. I'm going to go ahead and let Jewel, as we do every Saturday, bring us in. But I think first what I'm going to do, what I normally do, is go ahead and bring out the casting for it. So give me a second and we'll be able to. Excuse the noise, it's the fan. And we'll be able to help you to identify the cast of Wednesday, and you will see that there are a lot of classic players in there from the original Addams Family, and I love that, from the original horror genre. Jenna Ortega is back as Wednesday Addams. Emma Myers is back as Enid St. Clair. Percy Hines-White is Xavier Thorpe. Hunter Doohan, I think I'm pronouncing his name correct, is Tyler the Hyde. Gwendolyn Christie, we haven't seen her yet, but we will see her again. Miss Weems. Christina Ricci, back as Marilyn Thornhill. Gomez is Luis Guzman. Pugsley is Isaac Ordonez. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing you all's names. Please don't write me. Billy Piper is Isadora Capri. We have Fred Armisen as Uncle Fester, one of my faves. Brilliant Bianca Barclay. Everyone is brilliant, by the way, but I really love that the siren plays a big part. And her name is Joy Sunday. That young lady is going to go far. Steve Buscemi, I'm glad to see him as the headmaster, Barry Dort. Lady Gaga was in this one as Rosalind Rotwood. If you blink, you might miss it. Jamie McShane, Donovan Galton, the sheriff. Evie Templeton, Agnes DeMille. Another new person that I liked a lot, the little disappearing girl. I'm a fan of that little stalker girl. I don't know what that says about me, but I'm a fan. Okay. She wants to be known. She wants to be seen. Okay. Ricky Lindholm is Dr. Valerie Kinbot. Musa Mustafa as Eugene. And you should remember him from season one. Lucius Hoyos as Gomez Addams. Tandy Newton plays the doctor. Oliver Watson as Kent. William Houston as Joseph. Victor Dorobantu as the Thing. You know that he is a magician. I think it's brilliant. I'm glad he's able to make a lot of money because the Thing is pretty popular. I imagine some people were trying to figure out how to be the Thing for Halloween. Okay. Sophia Nombet as Connie Jorgensen, the sheriff. Johanna Dias-Watson as Davina. Callum Ross as Rowan. And many, many, many other players. I think that this is, this show, I think, really is for every generation. It's not just for kids. And it brings nostalgia back for some of the older people. It's a great show. It's clean, you know, to watch with your family, with your friends, you know, and just truly, truly just enjoy a classic being brought back into this generation and at this time. And who doesn't want to laugh at this time, you know? Who doesn't want to just be relaxed and just watch a good show? They did a really good job. And now Jewel is going to bring us in to the episode. Jewel?
Thank you. Thank you, Nikita. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, everyone. As Nikita so brilliantly brought us in, we are talking Wednesday, Child of Woe. The first episode in season two is called Here We Woe Again. Again, it is amazing. It is directed by Tim Burton. And we're going to go really deep into that. I can't wait to have that conversation. It was written by Alfred Goh and Miles Millar, and it was released on August 6, 2025, along with the other three episodes. Here We Woe Again. We have school is starting. Summer is over. We know all the things that happened in season one. And if you have not seen it, please, please, please go back, see season one of Wednesday on Netflix. It is an amazing tribute and homage to the Addams Family. And if you've ever been a fan of the macabre, of Edgar Allan Poe, of the Munsters, the Addams, this is a series for you. Again, we come back. School has returned. The entire family is in the car. Lurch is driving. The brother Pugsley, you see him now. He's part of this transition into season two. Dad Gomez, Mom Morticia, they're in the car and they're talking about how Wednesday and Pugsley need to prepare for this new school year. Pugsley is nervous. He looks slightly different. We're going to talk about that as well. And Wednesday is not so thrilled because is she ever thrilled? I personally was thrilled, and I know Nikita was too. We're big fans. So they're driving to school and they discuss the problems that Pugsley has a little bit. And we know that, or at least were taken from the conversation, that Wednesday is hopefully going to take her brother under her wing and go through the scenario of protecting him, showing him the ropes, and letting him know that being an outcast on the outside of the world is one thing, but when you're in a room full of other outcasts, it's going to be kind of difficult, but you got this. We also learn that much to the genealogy and the way things work, Pugsley is not just the creepy kid that helps his sister with the experiments, but he is electrification, and he has powers, and his powers are electricity, just like Uncle Fester. There is a little shade left in there as well, where he asks his dad, who is Uncle Fester's brother, and says, "That's a shame that you were kind of skipped on the gifts. You don't have any." And that was kind of sad. We're going to get to the school. And when we get to the school, we have the introduction of new players. Steve Buscemi is now the new principal. We know what happened to the last principal. She did not survive the Hyde attack. And we know that everybody's excited to come back to school, except for obviously Wednesday. During this episode, we get to learn a little bit about the new principal. We think he's going to be bland. We think he's going to be a little low key. Turns out he's got a little pep in his step. It's pretty cool. I'm a big Steve Buscemi fan, and I like when he plays various different characters. And this one was not very serious, very, very jokey, comic relief. And yet, when we continue through the series, we'll see that maybe things aren't as funny as they seem. We also see that the school has completely changed their attitude towards Wednesday. She's no longer the girl that they want as the standoffish kid. She's no longer the one that no one wants to talk to. All eyes are on Wednesday. She's exciting. They want to know how cool her summer was. They want to know how can they be cool like her. And we also see in this episode that they're going to pay tribute to her and her friends, Enid, the new werewolf. We know that she's just growing into her claws, right? And Bianca, the siren, and the Gorgon Ajax, which we know was dating Enid, her roommate, slash best friend, and how they saved the school last time from the Hyde, right? And they're going to pay tribute to them as a welcome back, as a this is going to be a great year, and congratulations, and thank you. Kudos to the leaders of last year. Hopefully they lead us into a better year. And we see a reconciliation of sorts between the siren Bianca, who was Queen Bee, right, last year, and kind of a, we thought, kind of a sort of a bully. And this time, you see her soften a little bit, and her and Wednesday had conversational tones towards each other. Pugsley is shy. The first episode goes a little quickly. We hear a lot of things during this first few days of school, including and not limited to Pugsley feeling left out. And we hear a story that involves the most amazing animation and brings back the old Tim Burton, what he's usually known for. Very macabre, very dark, but we have very Coraline, Edward Scissorhands animation in the description of the Clockwork Heart Boy. And that's important to say because with the description of the Clockwork Heart Boy, Pugsley finds his moment in the series. At first, and you know what? All these episodes are almost an hour long. They're like mini movies in and of themselves, which I thought was very interesting. Pugsley is not quite mixing with everybody. He's forced and to be with this bug kid. If you remember last season, the same kid, he was nearly eaten and killed and was in a coma for many days by the Hyde. And he doesn't want to get along with anybody. And since the story of the clockwork kid, Pugsley goes out looking for evidence of seeing if this is real or not. And there's an accident. And within this accident, we get a new character. We have the electrocution a la Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, and a zombie comes out from the ground and we have a new character. So we have so many new things to talk about. We have the shyness of Pugsley. We have him having electrocution powers. We have Thing being told to stay and take care of Wednesday. Wednesday is now very into her psychic gift. She's got powers. She's going to follow them. Morticia is worried about her. Gomez is just happy-go-lucky. The school has a new principal. The siren is nicer. They are friends. And everybody loves and wants to get a little piece of Wednesday. And Wednesday is still very standoffish, but firmly a fixture of the school. I want to know more about what Nikita thought about this episode, because it was so filled with extra things that I'm excited to see it and to hear about it. Nikita?
Thank you, Jewel. Thank you for bringing all that out. And you're right. The first episode was pretty cool because, and let me say, I left out the fabulous Catherine Zeta-Jones. There's no Morticia. There's no Addams Family without Morticia, without the mama. And Catherine Zeta-Jones did an outstanding, outstanding job. So I wanted to make sure and bring that out there. So in the first episode, we see Wednesday still driven to find out who a serial killer is, right? And she's going after the serial killer who no one seems to have been able to catch. And it's Haley Joel Osment, you know, from The Sixth Sense. I think he's hit his niche. You know, he is very convincing as a serial killer. He captures her. And of course, she ends up, you know, besting him, her and Thing, working as a team. And I thought to myself when I was watching that, I was like, you know, he'd be perfect. He'd be perfect for a Sinister or Conjuring movie, because those are my favorite horror movies also. And he did a great job. He did a great job. He's going, you know, he dressed her up as one of the dolls. Well, she's kind of sitting there as a doll. He didn't dress her up. And he's amongst all those dolls. And then, you know, she takes him out. And this is where you see, this is a little girl that shows no emotion, but literally seems kind of ecstatic to be serial killing too. Cause I mean, kind of like she is a serial killer, right? Okay. You know, as she goes to the airport, you see her with all these weapons and things. And I said, man, they didn't even arrest this little girl. She's got all these weapons and stuff. And the thing that they're upset about is the fluid ounce. That's so TSA. That is so TSA. You can have a knife or a gun, but let's not go past those 12 fluid ounces. So I was like, I said, perfect, perfection. And so this is how we first start out in the movie. And then, as Jewel says, they're getting ready to go to school after she does all of this. And she's having spells, which cause the black tears, right? I think we saw a bit of that in season one, but now it's more pronounced here as she develops her psychic gift. But she's using it more and more and more. And her spirit guide has been killed, but she has her spirit guide's book, right? So she's learning all of these things. Her spirit guide is gone. I think that when we are introduced to the school, I'm happy to see that her friend Enid is still there. Enid, I believe, has now kind of become an alpha in the pack, right? Because when Wednesday walks into the room, all these people are in their room, and she dismisses them like a leader. So I'm like, okay, so she's come into herself, even though she was a late bloomer, as we know with werewolves, right? There must be an alpha. And I think that she and her little boyfriend that she's flirtationing with or developing feelings for are the alpha. I mean, obviously she's popular because she's Wednesday's friend, but if you know about werewolves, it must be an alpha in the pack. So, this is what my assumption is. I love that she's coming into herself and, the dynamic between her and Wednesday. This Wednesday reluctantly cares about her. She cares about her so much that she brought her a serial killer doll. Okay. So what a friend. So she brings that, and you know, the episode starts. It starts really, really well. And we're introduced to Steve Buscemi, her little Gorgon boyfriend. You know, she's kind of being dishonest with him. She doesn't care about him the same way. And she is, I believe, being neglectful and not telling. But you know how kids are. We don't, you know, when you're young, you don't really know how to break up with someone or tell them that you're moving on. They've done this very seamlessly. This could be any kid in high school, any kid in high school, and the things that kids go through in high school. What we also realize is that Wednesday and her mother's dynamic is difficult. You know, Wednesday is a reluctant star of the school. She's got her little stalker crew that's after, you know, following her around. And everybody has said, yes, she is the popular girl in school. And it differently, whereas the siren, the young siren is letting her know, it's not easy being popular, is it? Because remember, she was the bully before. Bianca was the bully in the previous season, and now they're all friends. Well, Steve Buscemi, being the new headmaster now, is showing himself. Now, at first I thought, oh, okay, Steve Buscemi is going to be the opposite of the previous headmaster, who was good but had bad situation, right? I think that he's going to be a good guy, right? No, he's not a good guy. I love Steve Buscemi. I am glad that he is doing this. I am glad that he is in the realm of the Wednesday family, and I hope he lasts for a while. I hope he doesn't turn out to be also a serial killer, but later on we're starting to see there's something a little shady about old Stevie there. The principal's a little shady, but, you know, I mean, what is a monster without a little shade, right? Because everybody's kind of a monster. Well, now, Bianca, he's going to use her in order to get money for the school. As we start to find this out, she wants to be good. There are things going on, you know, she has a mixed dynamic with her mom. And we find out later on, she really is trying to change. She doesn't want to be a manipulator. She wants to be the opposite of her mother. You know, just like Wednesday wants to be the opposite of her mother. I love how they have these mother-daughter dynamics in here, in this storytelling, because it is really, really, really a true thing and a dialogue that probably happens all the time. Not probably, does happen all the time. Mothers and daughters, it can be very difficult. There's even the dynamic with Pugsley with his dad, but his dad is kind of simple-minded. You know, he eats buds and everything, and he loves his. But Gomez has always played that role in the Addams Family, and it's just so funny and over the top. I think they've done a good job. And so while we're watching this, I hope that some of you, when you're watching this, are watching the coolness of the transitions that are in here, because in this showing, this isn't just a remake or another rendition of the Addams Family. This is also some stellar filmmaking. You know, when we look at this, Tim Burton directed several episodes, and you can tell Tim Burton's work. Tim Burton has been around for a long time. He is a great director, in my opinion, for horror type of movies. And we see a lot of his work in season one. He directed 4 episodes, and he directed in season 2, 4 episodes. The first episode, the 4th episode. We haven't seen the 7th and 8th yet. But in those episodes he directed, what you will notice is the stop motion animation, the old classic, like Beetlejuice, like Coraline, as Jules said. Those things, when we talk about in the next episode about well, it's actually in the first episode about the little boy who disappeared, who died, who's underneath the tree that Pugsley finds, and then Pugsley raises him up and he becomes Pugsley's, well, I don't think he's friends with Pugsley, but Pugsley's friend with him because Pugsley is a very strange little child. Okay. And so I think that, that part that element of using black and white, which is crisp and sharp, there's a whole technical aspect to that. It's very cool. I'll probably bring it up later on. Not even probably, I will, because that's the nerdiness of me. And I believe that that is something that it was so important. Stop motion animation is really, really a cool, cool art form, in my opinion, and a classic filmmaking form. And Tim Burton made it popular. Edward Scissorhands, very popular. And all the only thing, even Jewel brought it up when we were discussing it, is that they all look like him, you know? I said, you know, you're right. That's true. That's always been his style. Crazy hair, strange face, always been him. And I just thought it was genius, and I thought it was beautiful. And I think that's why people like Tiny Chef so much. Blello, that's why I think they like him. Okay, because stop motion animation is cool. Okay, so I hope you all notice that and pay attention to that. Another thing, the score, genius. Not only does it bring you back to the classics, it gives you that nostalgia. The score fit every screen perfectly. So I thought, clap, clap, clap for that. Danny Elfman did an excellent job doing the score for this movie. A lot of people don't pay attention to the score. But the score, if done accurately, should transition seamlessly with the scenes. And actually, you should derive emotion from that. So subtly, you follow the scene with it. The music in the car, the music as she's walking up the stairs, the music when the strange little disappearing girl plays the prank, right? And the intensity of, they're going to die. They're going to die. I think they're going to die. Oh, no, they're not going to die. Okay. You know, a good composer is able to do that and get the audience caught up. I thought it was brilliant. I paid a lot of attention to that, and I was kind of impressed by that. Some people would go, oh, it plays a very strong role. You get to see what the music the teacher likes. And throughout all of it, they played a lot of classics, a lot of classics. Check it out, you know? And it introduces a new generation to music that they may not have heard before also, maybe from their parents, right? But that nostalgia is so important, just as nostalgic as the theme to the Addams Family, because you know when you hear da 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 da, that's the Addams Family, right? Just like with the Munsters, with everything. So I think everything that they did was very smart, very sharp. I think the actors that they used were actors from the 80s. Wednesday, the character of Wednesday, played by Jenna Ortega, was played by Christina Ricci many, many years ago, in the 90s, and also Lisa Loring. Was the first Wednesday. Those are my favorite Wednesdays, by the way, because there were 7 of them, or 9, I think, maybe. And those are my favorite Wednesdays because they stayed with the character and the reference of the character. And you know, have you ever watched a movie and they've done a remake of something and they're nothing like the character? And you're like, yeah, that was a bad fit. Everybody in here is a great fit, including the new people who seamlessly fit in with the narrative of the Addams Family. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're absolutely right. I think people forget that the Addams Family is a tale as old as time. And it started off by cartoonist Charles Addams and spelled the same way, A-D-D-A-M-S. It was a comic strip, single panel, like drawing with pencil in the newspaper, actually published in the New Yorker between 1938 and his death in 1988. Okay. And I know Nikita and I, we had these discussions about people being angry about how it's being portrayed now and all these other discussions that are people having on the sidelines. And let's be honest, this was a comic book strip in the New Yorker in the 1930s to the 1980s. Okay. And it wasn't until the 1960s when they actually got onto TV and they had a TV special that any of the characters were named. Okay. We have moments in time where, as Nikita so brilliantly said it in the beginning, in the exposition of our show, Blurred's Word today, where we as Blurreds, as outcasts ourselves, really diving into these things. And this particular themed show is macabre. It's very horror-based. It's very Edgar Allan Poe. It's very Charles Dickens. It's very Mary Shelley. If you think about Frankenstein, if you think about Bram with Dracula, it is very horror, macabre, old, dark, themed, right? Just sparkled and sprinkled with comedy. It's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be cute. It's supposed to remind us, as Nikita said, I love that. I love that. And I agree, of our childhood. And we're talking from back from the 1930s. So many, 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 many generations have enjoyed the Addams Family and the themes that the Addams Family bring to the screen. Again, it wasn't until the 1960s, and to be honest, 1962 was when Morticia and Wednesday, her daughter, actually got their names. We're talking 30 years of these characters not actually having their names. And why did they get their names? They got their names on the TV series because they were able to be created into dolls. Remember Haley Joel Osment being a serial killer? And he had a bunch of dolls and he picked up the doll, as Nikita said. The doll looked just like her. That's the same doll that named Wednesday. It was because of that. So all these individuals saying that this is different, this is no, honey, you have to be an actual fan to understand the beginning and the end and the middle. They are doing a phenomenal job. I absolutely love Tim Burton and what he's doing. I love what we see in this particular series, and we going back to the classics all the way back. And those of you that don't understand, maybe you should sit down and watch. Roll back that beautiful, I don't want to get bitten by copyright infringement and themes, and go back and look at the show from the 1960s, look at the show from the 1970s, look at the comic strip from the 1930s to the 80s, and see what it was really about. It was about the horrors, the horror monsters being brought into our reality and seen as outcasts and not giving a flying flip about what the rest of the world thought about them, because they were living authentically themselves. How many of us can fit into that theme? How many of us can feel like here we are just living our lives, and the rest of the world think we're strange and we're odd and we're weird and we're actually just existing? We're no different. And that brings me into our next episode, right? We have season two. We've already had Here We Go, Here We Woe Again. And then the second episode is The Devil You Woe. The Devil You Woe. Now we're finally into school. School is happening. People are back. We know the summer just happened. And what a wonderful message to send to not just people watching it as an audience member, but to fans in general. If you've ever felt like an outcast, if you've ever felt like something just doesn't fit right, but you have to exist with the rest of the world, wouldn't it be lovely if there was a place meant just for you? If there was a place that embraced you for everything you are and didn't matter how different you are to the rest of the world? Nobody looks at you like you're strange. No one looks at you as if you don't belong. No one cares that you're different because everyone here is different and you definitely belong here. That was the reason and the purpose for the school, Outcast. And in this next episode, we have sped forward to a new mystery happening. Wednesday has decided, I'm not going to be your poster child for no fun, loving, everybody's yay revolution, yay us. I'm Wednesday. Did you guys forget? Like, I don't like happiness. I don't like smiling. I'm not here for your revolution. And if you're going to follow me, I'm going to burn you and the revolution down. I'm not here for that. Sounds very anti-Susan Saran Wrap, and I'm for it. That's another reason why I'm like Wednesday's fan. And if you know who I'm referring to, you know who I'm referring to. Anyway, so we got Pugsley, who has revived a zombie with his electrocution powers. And we find out that the Clockwork Kid is real because his roommate opens up the chest and he sees that, and I'm just gonna call him the Bug Kid. I'm sorry, but I mean the kid's got bug powers, and we discussed this, Nikita and I, And on the low, you would think that the bug kid being able to dominate a bunch of bugs is not that cool. But then we started discussing it, and it pretty is kind of dope. You know what I'm saying? Because bugs are everywhere. And for you to be able to manifest and tell them where to go and how they can attack or not attack and be there or not be there, I think that's pretty cool. And we see that play out in Prank Day when Ajax, the old boyfriend of Enid, is very sad and depressed and upset that a new, as Nikita alluded to, they might be an alpha, a new dog is sniffing around his girlfriend. And that's not great. That's not nice. Eugene Odinger is played by Musa Mustafa, and he's the bug kid. From henceforth, we shall name him the bug kid, because I'm not going to remember that name. I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry, Mustafa, for not remembering the character's name. So bug kid is like, you're gross. This is gross. I don't want to be living in with no zombie. What are you doing? This is scary. And Pugsley's like, no, no, no. Now I got a best friend and I got a pet. And this is going to be cool. Along with all of this, Wednesday has completely dropped the ball on taking care of her brother. She has no idea there's a zombie. She's out here chasing this new stalker that seems to be stalking her and leaving her weird notes and taking pictures and stuff. And she also has found the sheriff, the old sheriff. Remember, the old sheriff is the father of the Hyde. And she's talking to him. It's like, what's going on? And she goes back to ask him what he's doing and why does he keep showing up, only to find out that he's dead. And he's not just dead. He's been murdered by a murder of crows. That's interesting. And that really screams to me the Edgar Allan Poe theme. And his eyes are gorged out. Here we have a new character that for me played a good character. It is the raven with the milky eye, and he's got a little red face over the milky eye. We now know that there is an avian meaning bird, and an individual that controls birds is out here killing people. And this is not the first murder that's happened. This is the second, because the sheriff had an accomplice that was looking things up. And she wants to know why. She looks around his room, his area, and she's like, I don't even understand why these birds are here. And we are now tossed into a murder mystery once again that Wednesday has to figure out. She's being stalked, one thing. Her brother brought up a zombie, two things. She's ignoring her brother and does not know that he's suffering. And she's also ignoring Enid, because now she has this murder mystery to go through. And when Enid touched her, she sees that something horrible is going to happen to Enid. And she doesn't want to tell her friend. And as Nikita said, she genuinely likes Enid, werewolf girl. She likes her so much so, you know, she wants to look out for her and wants to keep her safe. So we have a new murder mystery. We're in episode 2. We have had Here We Woe Again. This is the devil you woe. The old sheriff is dead. We got a brand new sheriff. We are introduced to Rachel Fairbaum, who is a new psychiatrist running the psychiatric ward. That is where we know that the Hyde Tyler is being held. We know that there's a person running birds all around the place. And everything is a mess. And the one thing we know is with her spirit guide gone, she is trying to hone in and perfect her psychic powers. And she's using the spell book of her spirit guide, Goody Adams, to try and find a way to stop Enid's death. And in doing so, And from the beginning of the summer, she started having these black tears. She has been suffering more and more and more. And her mom is not happy, not happy at all. And that brings in, as Nikita said, we have multiple themes. And one of these is the strife between mom and child. And Thing ratted her out and told Morticia, yeah, she been doing it, and she's using Goody's spellbook to do it. Again, the WO, so many themes to follow through with this, and I can't wait to hear what Nikita has to say about this next episode. Nikita?
The WO is a good episode. WO is a good episode. And where I was a little judgy in this episode, okay? I was a little judgy because I was like, little Enid, she's trying to cheat on her little Gorgon man. And she, after they went through all that in season one, and now she didn't see this little cute little werewolf person sniffing around her behind. You know how werewolves, you know, they're dogs now. Let's just be clear, they're puppies. And so they're doing all this, and she's being kind of dishonest. And I was like, wowzers. She's really changed. She's turned into that person. And there's a little arrogance to that, you know, but that's how alphas are, right? Alphas dominate. But yes, this episode was nice because what we know is that this is prank day. I kind of brought it up a little bit beforehand. And Wednesday confronts an old enemy, which is the sheriff and the hide, right? And then the sheriff gets killed and his eyeball gets delivered to her place. And because it's prank day, they're out here doing all these different pranks. But her roommate gets kidnapped in this episode. Her roommate and her little man that she's having situationship with. And so clues are left for Wednesday. I loved how they did it, you know, because the thing about this particular series that I think is really good is that it keeps you guessing. It keeps you guessing. When I saw initially, when the guy was spying and on the couple out in the woods and then the birds showed up, I was like, this is so Alfred Hitchcockian, you know? And then later on, obviously, Edgar Allan Poe, right? Crows. And then the milky eye of the crow. I mean, all of these horror symbols put together. I was like, oh, you're thinking this is the big story, right? And then her roommate goes missing. And you're like, who's stalking them? Who is it? Is it one of the kids? Is it one of the teachers? Is it the doctor in the hospital? What's going on? We don't know. And they did this so well. Like, I was surprised when I saw who the actual culprit was. But and I also love that they used the books to solve the mystery. What book is missing, right? The Invisible Man. Who is causing the problem? That little invisible girl. Okay. Who, by the way, I think is a good character. Is a great character for this, because I'm not gonna lie. I thought after season one, I'm like, where can they go? Where can they go with Wednesday? And remember in season one, you didn't see a whole lot of the other family. Now the whole family is incorporated in this season. The mom is staying in that the disgusting little pink house that Christina Ricci used to stay in. And she's changing it over to make it adaptable for her darkness and the way that she thinks. You know, they're there with the kids, and they utilize her as the donor because their family has a lot of money. Remember in season one, they were the outcast family. They all thought that they had committed big crime. That was the talk of the town. Now they are important to the storyline because of the money that her mom has. Her mom owns a bunch of funeral homes. She's a big donor for Nevermore, right? So I love how they went and took the story further. And I'm really glad that they've been renewed also already before this has even it come into play. I think it's important. I hope it lasts for a while. Netflix did a good job. Clap, clap Netflix on this. Because I will say initially, I was in super critical. And then rewatching it, I was like, man, this actually really is really, really well done. Really well done. And I'm very, very happy about it. Can't wait to see what the part two is. But we'll go back into the WO. I digress. So when the knives come down, I was like, that's it. That's it. Do you know how sometimes movies, it seems like they are taking forever to figure out something? You're watching it and you're like, can we hurry up, please? Can we hurry up? What is happening? What is happening? What is happening? Okay. And I was like, you know, and so I thought it was done very, very well. And I thought that little Enid was ungrateful. I'm just going to say it. I'm like, man, you are a very ungrateful little person. And this little invisible girl is going to give you a run for your money because she wants to be Wednesday's confidant and Wednesday's friend because she's a little stalker. Okay. When Wednesday goes and sees the hide in his natural form, obviously the sheriff's son, when she goes and sees him at the hospital, because the new mystery has come. All right, the sheriff has died, and she finds out that the invisible girl is the one that took the eyeball. That little girl is kind of gruesome, too. I mean, not only is she invisible, she's just a gruesome little person. So she says, and I took the phone. And she's got her own little clique, too. I mean, talk about an extrovert. She got a little monster clique with her, you know. Wednesday does everything on her own. And grudgingly, I think Wednesday respects her and admires her, at least enough to utilize her for the services that she needs. And she doesn't have to do a whole lot of, you know, nice and kindness with her, which she has to do with Enid, you know, because Enid's always like kind of side-eyeing her and everything. And that's that overbearing extrovert personality that makes every introvert kind of cringe, but they're friends. So we look at this and we look at now she's drawn into this new mystery. And then she goes and she visits his son, the sheriff's son, you know, lets him know his dad's dead and situation. And he says something I think that is very important. You know, you were drawn to me. You fell in love with me because I'm a monster. Really? You know, in so many words, that's what he is saying. There's a truth to this, that she is drawn to murder. She is drawn to mystery. She is drawn to the horrible, you know, and in that, that amplifies, I believe, her psychic skill. You know, she is drawn to the negative energy out there. And that's what makes her who she is, which I think is beautifully replicated on this show to show you that this is who she is. You know, and the dynamic between her and her mom had a problem with her own mom. And you know how moms always want to raise their kids to be better than they were treated? Now she's gone overboard in controlling and you know, trying to make Wednesday what she thinks or perceives Wednesday should be, her daughter should be. And you have that dynamic generationally now. You know, Wednesday fights against it, her mother. So it's that push and pull of mom and daughter. And then she, you know, and like Jewel said, Thing, you know, Thing kind of is a narc, okay? It feels like to me the hand is kind of whiny. Okay, the hand is kind of whiny, and telling everybody, you know, you don't care about me and my birthday, and then snitching her out. And you know, I mean, who knew a hand could say so much? Okay, you know, and Wednesday still trusts him, but he's underappreciated. And I believe that, you know, the way that they're telling this, it just works so well, because as we go out of this episode, The Devil You Woe, we go to the Call of the Woe, where she really tries to solve or work on this mystery, but she's lost her psychic power because she used it too much, because she passes out, right? She passes out when she touches Enid. She passes out. She realizes that Enid is going to pass, you're going to die. So you're thinking to yourself, oh no, what happened to her? And they explain it that, hey, this is one of those situations where you can't use your power so much. And she finds out that this also happened with her aunt. And you're drawn into that storyline. Like, how is she going to solve this? What's going to happen? Now she's going to have to do things the old fashioned way. That's what brings us into episode 3 of Call of the Woe. Jewel, you have the mic. Hi, Camille. Good to see you. Welcome. Welcome to our pod.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You're right, Nikita. Call of the Woe is the third episode. Remember, we just went through The Devil You Woe, moving into the Call of Woe. Wednesday gets into the phone that stalker girl helped her retrieve and realizes that there is a rendezvous and that there will be a huge investigation that needs to happen at a cabin that's near to where they have a field trip. Now, remember, Wednesday's not the popular girl, or so she thinks. She does not want to have anything to do with the popularity contest. She wants no fun whatsoever. She is the child of woe. Turns out that The dead sheriff had, as I said, a rendezvous at a cabin across the way. So she decides, you know what? Let's go to the capture the flag. Let's go to the camp. And here they show up at the camp, and it turns out there's a problem. Well, what's the problem? A bunch of normies are there, and it has been double booked. Well, that's a problem. That's a theme that Nikita and I discussed quite a bit before we started this episode. And that was all the different themes that we have touched on so far. The mom versus daughter theme. We have outcasts that always feel neglected, and here they are in a place that embraces them, that loves them for who they are. They don't have to change. And then now the next theme is outcast versus normie. Now remember, with the dead sheriff in season one, he was not happy that his son was this monster, this Hyde. And we have a lot of interaction between the people within the town versus the kids in the school that happens to be on the outskirts of town. So during this field trip, we have a camp instructor and a bunch of normies, just a bunch of boys, who are supposed to be, you know, enjoying their field trip in the woods. And three busloads of outcast kids. We are talking vampires, werewolves, psychics, witches, and a zombie in tow with Pugsley, unbeknownst to everyone else, shows up at this field trip and excursion that the outcast school has. And Wednesday says, yeah, I'm coming. And there's an argument between Steve Buscemi, the principal, and the scoutmaster of the normies. And he's like, well, we're not leaving because it looks like they double booked, and we're not gonna give you weirdos our space. And Wednesday, being the amazing individual that she always is, and begrudgingly the leader, right? She says, well, how about we play for it? How about we play capture the flag? And if we win, you leave. If you win, we leave. And these amazing Fabergé giant eggs, one green, one purple, and purple is part of the color for Wednesday. I love it. Purple is one of my favorite colors to wear, black and purple. And they're going to fight. They're going to fight to capture these eggs, these flags, right? In the back end, Morticia is worried and concerned because, as Nikita said, we have the principal trying to convince Bianca the Siren, Joy Sunday, which is her real name. I just love that name, to sirenly seduce Morticia into convincing her to bring her mom to chunk a bunch of money into the outcast school. Okay. And as Nikita said, and thank you for that explanation. That was so brilliant and wonderful. I love it when we get your backstory and when you talk about the various different things that we're covering. So they have lots of money, y'all. They got a lot of like money. Okay. So Morticia's mama has a lot of money, as she said. And yes, Nikita's absolutely right. In the first season, nobody likes these people. They're just trash people, they think. Turns out that Morticia made it on her own. And Morticia is her own individual. And she also graduated from Outcast. And she was Mrs. Popularity. And there's this discussion in this fight between Wednesday and Morticia. We have that in the Capture the Flag, the Call of the Woe. And if you remember Catherine Zeta-Jones, she was also in the Zorro movies. And part of that was sword fighting. So I love that one of the arguments that are settled between Wednesday and Morticia is through sword fighting. And Wednesday's very obstinate, very angry. She's a kid, okay? And she's like, how did you do that? You taught me everything I know. And I'm thinking, oh, baby, sweet, sweet, sweet little young child. You are taught from this grown woman all that you know. And before I even get to feel my feels, Catherine Zeta-Jones comes out with the, yeah, but I didn't teach you everything I know. And I'm like, yeah, that was That was so brilliant. Like, she's been Zorro's lady for how long now? You don't even know. So, okay, I love that. I love that. I love that. That was really great. But the reason why I said Pugsy was because I hadn't finished the whole Pugsy zombie thing. So Gomez is there. They're chaperones. Morticia's there. She's a chaperone. And she's remembering how she had this instant feel of this urge to call her mom and bring her forward and ask her to donate, which is kind of not really typically how Morticia does things, because as Nikita said, they have this problem, this acrimonious relationship. And she doesn't know that Bianca the Siren seduced her at night and told her to do this, right? And Steve Buscemi is hoping that all the money that the Addams Family matriarch can toss into the school, he can utilize for whatever plan he has brewing. We now know that this is very bad. He manipulates Bianca. I hate it. It's a really gross thing. And Bianca's really turning a new leaf. She's trying to be a better person. So here she is in this third episode trying to befriend Morticia, and because you could see she's racked and riddled with guilt for what she did. And she's having this conversation of, I'm really glad that I'm glad to see that you're here, and you're here for your daughter, and you're always by your daughter's side, and you're looking out for her. And she kind of lets it loose that her and her mom don't really have a great relationship. And she's looking forward to looking and meeting Morticia's mom, because she sees Morticia as a mentor, as a person to look up to. And she can't wait to see that relationship. And Morticia also alludes to, yeah, well, that remains to be seen, because again, this relationship isn't a good one. But remember that they had that conversation beforehand. The Siren is just trying to see if whatever she laid the groundwork on is going to happen, right? Bianca's seeing if the spell worked. Steve Buscemi comes in, notices that they're talking, wants to know if everything's happening. Now in the back end, Pugsley done brought the zombie in a vampire coffin because he couldn't be trusted, because he already got loose like twice beforehand. And he's in the tent. And he's like, I'm cool. I got everything under control because I got fireworks all around my tent. So if he gets loose, we'll know immediately. And I'm thinking, well, that's certainly going to be a blown up thing. That's not going to be great. And we have the catch of the flag. And if you had any questions about how it would go, why? We have the smartest person in the entire world working behind the scenes to make sure this works. And that's Wednesday. The show is actually called Wednesday, people. So it wasn't going to go any other way, right? And you have to watch it because it is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And we have various different team members called various different things. And there's an homage to Hamlet, which is also a very macabre, very dark play by Shakespeare. We have Ophelia, we have Puck, so many people there. This is, if you are a fan of reading and literature and old things, not just Edgar Allan Poe stories and not just Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, because remember Lurch, and we meet a female Lurch. We have Varicose, which Varicose veins. I love it. It's brilliant. We have so many giant moments of, oh my God, blurreds, nerds, geeks, and emo kids and adults alike. This is the show for you. Please, please tune in. It is, you are going to just drink it up, eat it up. It is blood to a vampire, and it will warm your cold, wretched heart back to life. I love it. I love it. I love it. So the zombie gets loose. The flag has been captured. And the campmaster, who is very upset and wants to get back at all the outcasts for winning the capture of the flag, well, he's not with us anymore because a zombie done ate his brains. And that's sad. The sheriff shows up. She's like, how come every time they've got a dead body Wednesday, you happen to be here? Like, what's the problem? What's happening? What am I missing? What's going on? And I'm like, oh no, they done think that Wednesday is a serial killer. And it's not like that. She just likes serial killing and is a fan of following, you know, the blood trail. She's not the serial killer. I think that's hilarious and wonderful. Mom has made the decision. Morticia is like, I won. I'm burning the book. I'm not going to lose you like I lost my sister. We now find out the story behind her sister, that her sister was also a psychic. Morticia is a psychic, as well as Wednesday. Her sister, Ophelia, was also a psychic and was lost. We are under the impression that she died because she was sent away by the Black Tears and falling into too deep a role into her abilities, where the psychosis took her over. And Morticia is very concerned and loves her daughter and doesn't want her harmed and wants to protect her daughter, unlike the way her mom, Grandmama, protected her sister. And so that's where we see the fight. And she decides, I'm going to throw this book away and my daughter's going to be saved. And she won that argument. And Slurp, by the way, is a name of the new character, the zombie. And he is running amok and he's going through eating everybody and their mamas and their daddies and their greasy grannies' brains. And we are led into, if these wolves could talk, we know that the investigation has led to a woman named Lois. The zombie is loose, eats the brains of the campmaster. The sheriff catches him. The zombie's taken to the insane asylum. And all eyes and fingers are pointed to Wednesday. And Wednesday's like, that's impossible. I had so many witnesses. It wasn't me. We don't know what's going on, but something is very, very, very up. And it all seems to be tied to us at Outcast and Tyler. So y'all need to figure that out. Going into If These Wolves Could Talk, Lois, Zombie, Insane Asylum, and so many others. Nikita, what happens next?
Thank you, Jules. That was excellent. That was an excellent summation of episode 3. Quack, quack, quack. And so, yes, yes, yes. But before we move on to that, I want to do a little breakdown for those young folks who don't know what a siren is and why Bianca is kind of important. And please watch season 1 so you understand where she plays in this, because literally they don't like sirens, because sirens are able to manipulate you. Imagine if a siren was able to manipulate its way into college, you know, without paying any money or anything like that. You see her do that with her mother in the hotel. Actually, that's literally how she got into the school, into Nevermore. And that's how the principal is blackmailing her. But she's getting her autonomy taken from her, as Jewel mentioned, and as I mentioned also. And it's going against what she feels and who she wants to be. She wants to be different than her mom. She wants to be different than the reputation. Although an outcast, she still is an outcast to the outcast when you think about it, right? No matter what she does, she is being manipulated by someone else because of her powers, like how her mom was manipulated. But let me give you a little bit of mythology on sirens, because hopefully we will see that again. Siren in Greek mythology is a creature, half bird, half woman, who, and I got this from Encyclopedia Britannica for those of you that are interested. But let me say this, sirens do not exist for real, at least not yet, and at least we do not know. I want people to understand that's not a real thing. Okay, mythology. Now, we don't know, but right now it's mythology. Okay, it's a creature, half bird, half woman, who lured sailors to destruction by the sweetness of her song. According to Homer, here we go, Homer. Remember we talked about Homer last week, the Odyssey, a wonderful, wonderful thing. There are two sirens on an island in the Western Sea between Ea and Scylla. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Scylla, Scylla. Later, the number was usually increased to 3, and they were located on the west coast of Italy near Naples. They were variously said to be the daughters of Phorcys, or the river god Aeacus, and by one of the muses. In Homer's Odyssey, book 12, the Greek hero Odysseus, advised by the sorceress Circe, escaped the dangers of their song by stopping the ears of his crew with wax so that they were deaf to the sirens. Odysseus himself wanted to hear their song, but had himself tied to a mask. And that's very famous. That's a very famous image in Greek mythology. So I'm very excited once again to see how the greatest story ever told turns out, the Odyssey. And I hope they incorporate all of these things. You know, I think mythology is so, so cool. And mythology has a lot of our monsters in them, right? So I think it's a great thing. I think it's pretty dope. Also, remember when she realized that the principal was trying to play her, she tried to, you know, siren him, and he turned out, he took this little bottle out, if you notice, and it had the siren's tears, or the antidote to the siren, I guess you could say. And he's like, I carry this everywhere I go, so you're not going to be able to do anything. So he's a schemer. He had always planned to use her against Morticia so that Morticia could get her mom to come, you know, because she equally, like Wednesday, is anti all of this foolishness, engaging with normie behaviors, right? Because getting money to a school is like a normie behavior. We don't know that she's not a donor, but, you know, she's very, very, very happy her daughter's at this school. And we know that Gomez went to school there because he's like a child when he goes to Pugsley's room, you know, and then he tells him his little gangster stuff. He's such an interesting cat. When the, you know, zombie at the campgrounds in this episode that we're talking about, that Jewel, I was chuckling when Jewel was bringing it out. When Gomez was taking a shower and the zombie with his half brain cell is going after it. The zombie done got an axe, y'all. The zombie done got an axe. Okay. So he's got a part of his brain that's telling him this could be an easier way to get to the brain. You know, and Gomez turns around and sees him, and then Pugsley and Bug Boy. I don't know. I don't know if I feel right calling that young man that, but he does have a cool gift. When they get him and capture him, after he kills the scoutmaster, because I loved how they did that task and how Wednesday was smart about it. All right. You know, and how they were able to finish. And I was so disappointed that people didn't. Bugs. Oh, that's a good name. Bugsy. So instead of Bug Boy, Bugsy. So thank you, Jennifer. So I think that when they were going out there and they started their task, how y'all not going to really know that Wednesday is going to win? Just like Jewel said, this is the Wednesday show. This not the camp normies winning show. This the Wednesday show. Of course she's gonna win. How dare y'all not believe in her genius? She's gonna figure out a way. She wasn't sweating it, you know. But I did think it was cute how the dogs were running, how the werewolves were running. I was like, oh man, it would have been even better if they had turned into werewolves. But I mean, we were able to see it was kind of off-putting to see those kids running like that. But we know, you know, we know that they're werewolves and that's what they do. And then the tear gas gets them, and the Gorgon, you know, he got his hat taken off. And I said, here's how kids are all kids. When Enid and her beau, you know, finally break up, you know, he says, I know I'm slow, but, you know, now you're with this, and typical dog. He walks off while those two go through their thing. And I'm like, look at this young man. Okay. He could even stand with the girl that he's trying to mate with here and say, yeah, this is my lady right here. He walks off. I'm like, oh, wow. That's so typical. And so she's got to deal with the situation herself. And in dealing with that, the other scouts come up and they go, wow, I really feel bad for the Gorgon. Boys will be boys and kids will be kids. And this is where normies and the outsiders are alike. They love, they laugh, they cry, they have feelings, and they have relationships. I thought that was pretty, pretty dope and pretty realistic. And one of those things where we're more alike, like more alike than different. Like, yes, exactly. And so I said to myself, you know, I like how they're doing this in such a clean way. Like, let's say you're sitting there with your family watching this. You could have conversations about these things. Kids are very closed off about their relationships, but I bet brothers and sisters are having these conversations. Did you see how she treated him? That was weak sauce, what she did. Why didn't she just tell him up front? Why wait till they get to the camp? That's kind of foul. You know, that's the kind of conversations that you would have. And I forgot to mention that the Scoutmaster is Anthony Michael Hall, another great actor that is brought back from the 80s and 90s, the Rat Pack era, all the movies. I love that he's in this in his typical era. I'm like, look at him with them shorts on. being all ate up. We're gonna win. Then your brain gets eaten. See, sir, you could have been in some more episodes if karma didn't come get you. But I love that they bring back people from the past to the present. And I love that these actors are getting seen again and getting known again. I hope to see them in many other things. But this episode was a great episode. It had action. It had laughs. It had horror. You know, it had mystery. And in the end, it has murder, because it wouldn't be Wednesday without a murder. And he was killed there. And it was also a moral quandary, too, though, because the kids were like, they won fair and square. And him as a normie, you know, he's like, no, we're going to win whatever. And that's why you got your brain ate by the zombie, sir, because she's trying to cheat. Karma's the thing. Okay, so we see the end of that and we go into the next episode. I thought it was a great episode. I love what Jewel had to say. I love what Jennifer's saying here about calling him Bugsy. But you know, I think his gift with the bugs, with the bees, I thought that was genius. Okay, but then again, me being me, I'm like, what if those kids are allergic? Why did he do that? He could have killed somebody. But then I'm like, but they won, so there's that. Okay, I'm always on that. You know, I want to help everybody out, but then I'm actually on the side of the outsiders, BT Dubs. So it worked out really, really well. Jewel, you have the mic.
That's right. I don't think we have a problem with them being all serial killers because I mean, we're talking about a school that houses vampires and werewolves and witches. And, you know, I think one of them has a pet zombie. So I think it's safe that Bugsy, a.k.a. Bug Boy, a.k.a. Mr. Mustafa, he has a cool power. And it's okay that we, you know, got people all bitten up or stung by the bees. Because, I mean, they're the outcasts. It's better than being bitten by a werewolf, I think. So that was pretty cool. Okay, the next episode that we just wrapped up, the last episode was episode 3, Call of the Woe. And we roll into If These Woes Could Talk. If These Woes Could Talk. Often associated with If These Walls Could Talk. And remember, we were left in our last episode about a woman named Lois in the asylum. So we're at the place where Wednesday is walking towards this investigation as if the asylum has everything to do with it. We now know that the old sheriff that was murdered by a murder, so a group of crows, that the avian, the person who runs the birds, sent them to gouge out his eyes. On his research board in the cabin were a bunch of old articles that had to do with missing outcast kids. Over the course of years, we're talking decades and decades of missing outcast kids, various different ones, and they're all dead. And the sheriff was investigating that because that was the meeting that was going to be held at the camp, the cabin that was across the river from the camp, which is the reason why Wednesday went. And she believes that it all leads back to the walls of the asylum, the one where the hide, Tyler, is being held. So she needs help. She can't do this on her own. So she hires, drum roll, please, Uncle Fester. Uncle Fester is back in the game. He has to send himself back to an asylum, which he loves because that's like a vacation for him. And he does so by going to the local bed and breakfast and causes a ruckus. Unfortunately, that is where Bianca is keeping her mom. And we learn that her mom was being held captive by a cult. And that is why she is softened with the relationship of her mom. She wants to do better. The police find Fester. The police find Bianca's mom. and they question both of them. As Nikita has said, the siren, Bianca, the young lady, she uses her gift to get her mom free. And Ajax, the Gorgon, and Bianca decide to hide her mom somewhere in Nevermore, because there's plenty of places to hide in the gruesome school like Nevermore. And in the other side of town, Uncle Fester is doing research on who Lois is and why is Lois important and what would Lois be doing with all these kidnapped outcast kids. He has a very steamy, gross relationship with the cafeteria lady and finds out after interviewing an older individual who used to work for the school and the asylum at the same time, he interrogates a parrot, which makes sense because we're dealing with an avian, a person who runs birds. And the bird gives him a number and says, Lois is here. Lois is here, and gives him a number. He tries to talk to this gentleman a little more because he seems to be in an awakened sense of comatose. He's not all there, but he is slightly in and out of reality, and he's wheelchair bound. Uncle Fester wheels this gentleman who used to work at the asylum to his room, and he wakes up and he points at the maintenance closet and says, Lois, Lois, Lois. So now Uncle Fester knows that Lois is hidden in the maintenance closet. And as things happen, Wednesday ends up back at the asylum. Okay. Wednesday ends up back at the asylum. She's had an argument with her mom. Things aren't good. She's been attacked again by birds. Evidence that she had has been taken. She finds out that a name of the individual who used to work at the asylum hired for tombstones to be placed in her grandmother's cemetery. And they're all related to these outcasts. And she thanks Grandmama and kills two birds with one stone, haha, by getting her mom upset by dealing with Grandmama. Grandmama helps her. She shows up at the asylum, and all Hades has broken loose. The zombie done got away. He's eating everybody's brains. Everybody, everybody, everybody's screaming, yelling, hollering. We think that the music teacher is the avian. She's playing her heart out for all these patients, and it's an emergency situation. Everybody got to run. Everybody got to run. Zombies on the premises, and it's loose. There's no control. It's nothing but chaos. Uncle Fester and Wednesday have united forces and they're going to the maintenance closet and they find out that Lois is not a woman at all. Lois is an acronym for long term L, outcast O, integration I, study S. L-O-I-S, long-term outcast integration study. And basically, it's a secret program where people were kidnapping these kids and torturing them and utilizing them in the most strangest, horrendous ways to find out how they work. What is it about them that makes them powerful, that gives them power, that makes them who they are? And they have been tortured this entire time. And that's not the worst part of it. The worst part of it is they're still there. They never died. They have been suffering these experiments and this torture for decades. Some of these people are so much older than Wednesday. They were there before she was born. Okay? Upstairs, the zombie's wreaking havoc. He eating everybody's brains. And in the chaos, Christina Ricci gets free and decides she's going to get her baby back. Remember, she is the Jekyll to the Hyde. She is the one, the master that runs Tyler's monster. She controls him. She has a spell over him. She was brought to this asylum to try and break through. and speak rationalization into this monster and make him more a good product of the society. And he has never forgiven her. She lets him free, and he says, "You think that I'm going to forgive you?" And I'm just paraphrasing. "And you are the reason why I'm here, and I'm going to take you out like I'm going to take everybody that caused me this much pain," and kills her. So here we are in the last episode of part one of season two, and we have a Hyde that has killed his master, Christina Ricci Dungal. The person that runs the asylum, her brain's done been eaten. The dude that was comatose but awake, that was actually running the shenanigans and doing all these nefarious deeds, his brains done got eaten too. The zombie is looking for people. So we have a zombie on the loose. We have the Hyde on the loose and untethered. He has no one to tie her together. Christina Ricci is gone. The person that's running the asylum is also, her brains were eaten. And we still don't have the avian, the person that's running the birds. They're not in captivity either. And Tyler runs in to Wednesday in the hall. And Wednesday was trying to save one of the outcasts that were underneath in the basement of Lois, and tells the person to run. Enid is waiting to call the authorities should she need. And so is Stalker Girl, creepy, invisible girl. And in this moment of holding our breath, we think, okay, so what happens? And Wednesday gets catapulted out of the window, lands on the ground. Enid calls police, and the Hyde runs away. And we don't know how the next part of the season is going to go, because all we have is more unanswered questions and really bad, bad guys on the loose, with Wednesday in a coma and harmed. The Hyde is on the loose. The person who's running the birds is nowhere in sight. A bunch of outcasts have been let out. The insane asylum people, they have been left out. They're running amok and running free. And we don't know how this is going to end. Nikita?
Very well done, Jewel. Very well done tying all that up in that last episode. That last episode was a culmination of all the previous episodes, and I think it's going to be very, very, very exciting. Now, the previews are out already for part two. What we do know is that Christina Ricci's character has gone to the great beyond. We do know that Tyler is loose. We do know that Bianca is able to help her mom, but also that, and I think a lot of people are like, well, if they're both sirens, why can't her mom do it? Well, Bianca's mom is losing her power, and that's why she needs her daughter. You know, her power is fading. That's something that a lot of people, I think, didn't understand, and so she had to help her mom. And what we are seeing is, and I think in part two of season two, what we're going to see is all these characters come together to try to help Wednesday. Now, we know from the previews that she wakes up, right? That's all we know. What we're going to see, a more powerful Wednesday? Is Enid going to stand by her? I don't know. I'm looking at the previews and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm wondering how she sees this. I like the character growth of all these characters from season one in season two, and I like the new characters they're presenting. I'm going to be very interested to see how they play out in part two, and I hope the people watching are going to be interested. This is really a good show. It is really well done. I think it's worth the watch. I think that it's not shallow, right? It's not a shallow piece of art. It is, it's good entertainment, good acting, looks like the idea and the emotion of today's generation and what they're going through. It is very common emotions as old as time when you are kids, trying to belong, trying to fit in, how sometimes our differences make us most alike, and just trying to survive to get to adulthood, right? and the dynamics between parents. I love seeing this dynamic. I really, really do. And watching how it's going to work out. And the reality of, you know, this is something that parents actually really go through. You send your kids to school, you hope your kids are okay. You know, kids were missing in that school. And Wednesday is solving that mystery. The people that you trust are supposed to be your teachers. This teacher is not trustworthy. I'm not so sure that music teacher is trustworthy. I'm not sure. She seems very ding dong nice and everything, but we don't know. We don't know. We don't know. Okay. So, you know, we got a lot of things that we're curious and worried about. I love Uncle Festus. He is a messy weirdo, and he would be my friend. There are two people in this show that I would be friends with. Well, three maybe. And Jewel was not surprised when I said it. That little invisible girl, I'd be friends with her, okay? I'd be friends with Festus, even though he's kind of gross and everything like that, and I'd probably be looking at him between my eyes. He does some real gross stuff. But for him, love is love, and he has a real odd dynamic, and I'd be friends with Wednesday. You know, so I think, and be, well, four, because I'd be friends with Bianca too. I'd be friends with Bianca because she's just really a genuinely good person, you know, and she's got a cool gift. So yeah, I think this is like, very, very, very cool. I think a lot of introverts would be like, this is a great introvert show. And then you have the aspect of the extrovert seen through the eyes of the introvert. I've always loved the Addams Family because of that, because of their outcast behavior. But I would be friends with that whole family. I'd be going over there. I don't think I'd eat their food now. That'd be questionable. But I'd be going to their house. I always thought that when I was young, that I would go hang out with them. Same reason I like the Munsters, you know? So I think that's really excellent. And they picked a great character in Fred Armisen. And Jewel reminded me, and I think it's very, very cool that the person that played Fester in the actual original is in this show too. Every single person in this show at some point was a part of the Addams Family franchise, I believe. Yes. Jewel, you have the mic.
Christopher Lloyd. Yes.
Absolutely. And I would want to be remiss in mentioning that. So thank you so, so much. And thank you for that. Look, this show, if you have a doubt about watching this show and you think it's just some kid show, there's not one child in this podcast. Okay. And I believe we all enjoyed it. Now, we don't like every movie we see. We don't like every TV series we see. And you may find that out sooner rather than later. But I thoroughly enjoyed this. And I think you will too. Jewel, you have the mic.
Thank you so much, Nikita. Yes, you're absolutely right. Christopher Lloyd played Uncle Fester before, and now he's the head, and he's actually, I love his lines in this one. Real quick before we start closing up and making sure we get to hear what Jennifer's perspective is about the show. He says, she asked him whether or not they've ever had an avian going to the school. And she said, he says, it hasn't, it's been years. And she asked him about this name that grandmama gave him and who this person is. And he said, he was very popular. He was a professor. He worked here. He came here after his wife died, but I didn't like him. And she goes, why not? He goes, because he was a normie. I didn't like him. And he didn't quite fit in. And I absolutely love that, because in a place where, yeah, we have teachers and students and we have Steve Buscemi being aggressively abusive against the siren's powers and how she got in and threatening, I still felt like what he was doing as a professor, Professor Orloff, the head in the jar, he was being protective of his school and the children that he was responsible of being the caretaker for. And not liking that a professor who was normie from the outside coming in to be able to harm his students. I love that perspective. I really, really, really do. And Nikita's absolutely right. It's not just kids in this room, y'all. And I know it's not just kids watching this show. So we would love to hear what you have to say. And in going in that segue, welcome, Jennifer. Thank you for always being here. We would love to hear what you thought. And remember, this is a podcast and we have limited time, but we can't wait for more conversation afterwards in the after pod. Jennifer, Wednesday, season 2. Holy cow. What did you think?
Good afternoon, ladies. Thanks for inviting me to participate again. It's so great to listen to you all get so excited about this series because there's so much to be excited about. I was so glad to watch this again. Because the last season was so great. And as I began watching the first episode, I was immediately reminded of why I love this rendition of the famous Addams Family. In the intro, Netflix does a cute thing with Thing, running up with his fingers and then snapping his fingers twice and the Netflix logo lighting up. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's from the theme song. I remember that. It's wonderful. I love it. This is why I love this thing, because it gave me, and just like Nikita was saying, it gave me so many vibes from like I used to watch the old shows. I liked the older shows that my parents watched from like the series when it was on television. I loved that. I remember that song. It made me look up the song and play it a couple of times. And it also made me think about the rendition of the song that MC Hammer made in the 1991 movie. And I was listening to that too. And I was like, this just brings back so many good vibes from my childhood. It was great. It was great. The things, I'm just going to try to mention a few things, that I enjoyed as I was watching these episodes. In episode one, I do love that they brought back the same actors from last year. Luis Guzman came back as Gomez. Catherine Zeta-Jones came back as Morticia. I also noticed again that Tim Burton is the director. I was like, oh my gosh, I remember him. So I really did like seeing that as I was watching the credits roll in the beginning. And then I immediately enjoyed what Wednesday says at the beginning. She's tied up and she says, it's been an eventful summer. I thought this was hilarious to me. I'm tied up in a serial killer's basement. I was like, oh no, not Wednesday already. It's some stuff at the beginning of the season two. I was like, this is just like her. This is wonderful. This is just like Wednesday already in some stuff. And she was like, just explaining where her situation was. I thought that was great. But the scene gave me horror movie vibes because the dolls sitting there all dusty. And I was like, oh my gosh, this reminds me of like a serial killing woman from the Criminal Minds series. It's this scene specifically brought me back to that series because there was a woman who was turning the women that she kidnapped into human dolls. And she would sit them at the table and play dolls. I was like, oh my gosh, that's what this reminds me of. I was like, I'm already getting horror movie vibes. This is wonderful. This is great. I did love that Thing is back as her accomplice, as Wednesday's accomplice and all of her things that she's doing. He's helping her with her mission. And I thought it was hilarious that as the family was bringing Wednesday back to her school, they were leaving destruction in their way. It was so funny to me. I was like, I don't know why I'm laughing at this, but it was hilarious to me. I loved it. I was like, they done messed up the signs and they got these cars crashing in the background. I was like, this is the Addams Family. I remember Anita. This is why I love them. Okay. So that was all great. Another thing that I noticed that really was interesting to me was the crow, which of course we know that relates to the whole Edgar Allan Poe, vibe that this whole school is based off of. And they reference this so many times, but it gave me a vision of one of the characters from Batman called Two-Face. This crow's face was like split in half. Like, it was one side was like really red and blistery and the other side wasn't. It gave me Two-Face vibes, and I had to look it up because I was like, is that like Two-Face? Yeah, because and then as I looked, went down the rabbit hole again, I started thinking about the the way that this whole series on Netflix deals with the concept of duality, of something that's two parts of the of one thing. And so two faces, two parts, one thing. So I was like, okay, this crow is giving, something is going on with this crow, something, you know, not off, unnatural, something unnatural is going on with the bird, this crow. And of course, or raven, it's, of course, we found out later that what that is. I did notice also that the tale of the skull tree was very Tim Burton, was very Nightmare Before Christmas vibes. I was thinking Coraline, I was thinking Paranorman, I was thinking that whole family of movies that Laika, I should look at the pronunciation, but Laika made that I love, and specifically the skull tree gave me the visual of the Paranorman one, stop motion stop motion. That was one of my favorites also, along with Coraline. They're all in the same family of animations out of the same production place. I mean, these things, the stop motion is so wonderful. It takes them like 3 years or more to make these kind of animations. And I think it's just great. And Coraline is one of my child's favorites and is also one of my favorites. So I thought that was great. I also noticed that they never mentioned the real name of this Clockwork Heart boy. And I was like, what is his name? Then, of course, Pugsley gives him a weird name in the next episode, but whatever. I also noticed on another viewing that the Kansas City Scalper is the same actor from The Sixth Sense. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. I was like, he was bringing me back. I was like, I remember The Sixth Sense. That was a weird movie. It was a good movie, but it was a weird movie. I was like, I can't believe they brought him. What if he is still out here doing stuff? He ain't a child actor no more. So I was like, he's still working. That's great. Then I started looking at the symbolism of the, you know, the colors and the stuff, and specifically the colors in the former home of, you know, where the Thornhill lady was staying. And it was pink. It was a lot of pink. And I was like, is that pink indicative of anything? So I looked it up. There's actually something called a Baker Miller pink. That science that was actually used in real life in a psychiatric hospital to help calm down people with mental issues. And I'm like, so what is, so was Thornhill really a homicidal maniac? Like Wednesday described her, was she trying to tranquilize herself with all this pink in her dog? Because it was a whole lot of pink. It was too much pink. I was like, why is all this pink up in here? I was like, was she tranquilizing herself? I don't know. But I thought that was really interesting that it was all that pink. And she's actually, not sane person. So anyway, meaning the Thornhill lady who, you know, is currently in an institution at this point in the story. So, that was pretty much all from the first episode. The second episode, wait a minute. Was that the first or the second? Okay, so the second episode. The first thing that dropped that I started noticing was the vision was replayed and that white rose was back. And I was like, does that white rose have any significance? And I was like, it probably does. and I guess we're going to have to see if it's got any significance later on. I was like, why is that? Then I noticed that, I'm going to try to say this correctly, Tandiwe Newton is Dr. Fairbird. She's one of my favorite actresses. I was glad to see her as a new character. I was like, oh, goodness, that's great. I was like, this is great. I was like, we got a new character. I love having new characters. It always brings some other element to any kind of show, movie, or series. I was like, oh, something's happening. Something's going to happen. So, in episode two, I started getting worried about Wednesday's visions, like, cause you know, she kept getting from the first episode, like, she kept getting the black tears, and I was like, that doesn't seem great. That doesn't seem like a good sign. And also, by the time we get to episode two and Enid pulls her prank, because, you know, it's prank day at the Nevermore Academy. And, she's I feel like maybe her vision at that point, I was like, okay, so maybe her vision isn't so clear like she thought it was. Like maybe she hadn't really honed her skills as well as she thought she did, because I was like, Ina's not dead. She's just did a prank on you. Maybe your vision isn't as, you know, maybe you need to work on that a little bit more. That's what I started thinking. I was like, maybe it means something else. So I started looking for other meanings from that point on in the series. I also, after rewatching the second episode, also noticed the lady, the connection between the lady, the receptionist, and Dr. Fairburn, and how she had this autographed book that Dr. Fairburn made, and her office was also painted pink on the walls. I was like, it should have been some hits from the first show. Like, I was like, that's what I started looking at her more, because, you know, eventually we learn how important she is by the end of the of these four episodes. I also noticed something very poignant that Tyler says to Wednesday in this episode when she comes to visit him. He's talking about Ina here. He says, "I want her screams to haunt you for the rest of your life." So it was interesting to me how he doesn't want. He wants to kill Enid. He tells Wednesday, "I want to kill Enid," but he doesn't want Wednesday dead. I thought that was poignant. I was like, okay, so you want her to be haunted for the rest of her life, which means you want her to live and be haunted by what you claim you're gonna do to Enid. And it made me think, is he still in love with her? I don't know. I guess we'll have to find out in the next four episodes. I was like, what's going on with this dude? By the time I get to episode three, I'm thinking, of course, Pugsley brings Slurp to the camp retreat, of course, because, you know, that's just how this story is going to go. It's going to make the story more interesting, I guess. Him, Pugsley, trying to manage his pet zombie. I don't understand why he wants to do this, but okay. Whatever. He brings them to the camp retreat. And of course, this is the episode where everybody else finally finds out about the zombie. I did feel bad for the driving instructor, though, that the zombie got to in the previous episode. I was like, that's just so sad. The poor driving instructor. I was like, that's just sad. Poor driving instructor. But I also started noticing that he seen the zombie itself seemed to become more human. And it made me go down a little rabbit hole. And I found out that Disney did a couple of zombies where they explored this idea too. Because I was like, is that breaking the zombie rules? Like, he's not supposed to be like becoming more like a human as he's eating human brains. I don't understand why this is happening, but I was like, this seems like it might be breaking some kind of zombie rule. But I was like, okay, so maybe this is something new. And I was right, this is something new, this recent thing that people, you know, have been exploring when they bring about these zombie movies, this idea of the zombie becoming more human like because I'm like, that zombies are not supposed to be human like at all. So that was interesting. I thought it was commendable also that Bianca helped her mother escape the cult. I thought that was wonderful. A testament to her character. The character, Bianca's character, she was trying to do good things. You know, I like that. Let's see. I'm up to episode three. It was so interesting to me watching this whole camp, you know, never mind the fact that this whole camp idea was giving me Jason Voorhees, Friday the 13th vibes. I was just waiting for the lake to show up. I was literally like, okay, where's the lake? Where's the lake? Where's the lake? That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, okay, there's got to be a lake. There's a body of water, but there's no lake. So I was like, yeah, this whole thing is giving me horror movie vibes, Friday the 13th to be specific. But I did like it because once again, Wednesday, this is her show, honey. This is all about Wednesday. It's interesting how she keeps achieving stuff while she's actually trying to accomplish other stuff. Like, she wins this competition that she created to this, you know, to help decide who gets to use the campgrounds. And she inadvertently does something that Principal Dort commends her for later. He's like, oh, you helped like bring this whole, the whole outcast, you know, community together. And I thought that was wonderful, but that really wasn't what she was trying to do. She was trying to find out about the bullpen, you know? So, I mean, it's just a testament to her character also. So yeah. That was all great. It was very entertaining, that whole episode. Let's see, episode 4. I'm going through stuff pretty quickly here. The thing that stood out to me about by the time we get to episode 4 was the whole thing with Lois and that whole, the whole horribleness of the people being experimented on. Like, and it got me going down the rabbit hole again about Dr. Moreau and Victor Frankenstein and how they also were into, you know, this idea of trying to experiment on living things. Like, why are you doing this? This seems very immoral. Didn't make sense to me. You know, none of those stories really ever, I never could understand why these people wanted to do these things, but, I mean, I know they had their reasons, but it all gave me like not great vibes for a little while. I had to stop watching the show for a minute. But when I came back, I focused more on the fact that people are always trying to change stuff that should not be changed. And that's what I started thinking. And I'm like, let people be people. This is why I love the Addams Family so much. They're themselves. They don't apologize for it. They don't try to assimilate. They don't try to banish their own, who they are, who they genuinely are. And it just makes them more appealing to me. As I watch these, the Addams Family, in any type of, television or movie, meat type media, it seems really great to me. But in episode 4, I also noticed that I started asking questions like, why is Wednesday leaving with that one person from the secret asylum? I want to know more about her. I'm like, why is she leaving with that one? Why is that the one she's walking out with? It makes me think something is going to happen there later. And I noticed at the end of this episode that Wednesday is the one who ends up in a coma after being attacked by a beast. Because last season it was Eugene or the Bug Boy or Bugsy. I want to try to call him Bugsy. So, yeah, that's, I just want to see what happens next. I want to know what happens next. Because this whole episode left a lot of questions for me, a lot of questions. I was kind of upset in episode 4 that Dr. Fairburn had to come to an end. Her existence had to come to an end. I didn't know why. And the first time I watched, I was like, why? We just got her. What's going on? Then I found, then as I looked closer, I was like, oh, she's friends with the Stonehurst. Okay, that's not great. Never mind. I went from I had a range of emotions about this episode. I had questions about Miss Capri. What is up with her? She's a, you know, outcast. Why did she really decide to come back to Nevermore and you know, support her community? What's up with that? Okay, Lois is over. The rumors were quite true about that program. What's going to happen with that? So I'm just wondering, excited about what's going to be next for this series. It seems really great. Brought back a lot of good vibes from my growing up, coming of age days. And also don't let me forget to mention that Uncle Fester's back, and they added her grandmama, Hester Frump. in this episode. I thought that was great. Another character, another part of the whole family mystery, and it also adds to the question of what really happened to Ophelia. So a lot of questions still need to be answered. So I hope that these next four episodes do answer some of those. But this is a really good, really good, really good series. I really enjoyed it. It was very pleasurable to watch. And I think that's about all I wanted to highlight for now. Thanks for letting me participate, speak.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I like all of your assessment. And I enjoy when you come because you do your homework. We say, sometimes we'll say what the next one's going to be. And I love that you do your homework. When we used to do this on the other app, you know, people would come in, they hadn't seen it. I don't know what ish app, whatever. Anyway, but it's always enjoyable when people like the same stuff you like and have the same, maybe different ideas. I want to say a couple of things about some things that you said. One, thank you for the correction on Tandy Wayne Newton's name. I've been calling her Tandy Newton for years, and it was the result. This is historical. The result was a misspelling in her first film credits. You know, she's been an actress for a very long time, and she's sharp, 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 smart, right? But her actual name is Tandy Wayne. T-A-N is pronounced. T-A-N-D-Way. The W was added back in 2021 when she reclaimed the correct spelling and pronunciation. I think a lot of that had to do with also her daughter is an actress also. And I think it's important. Your name is important. So thank you so much for that clarification, because she is an excellent actress. And she has been around for a while. I am a little sad she won't be in the next, she might be. She might be a zombie. I don't know, but we don't know. We just don't know. Okay. So, you know, in Z Nation, the zombies became more human. So you're correct. But the rules with zombies are pretty much like this. If a zombie bites you, you become a zombie. There are several ways to become a zombie: virus, flesh eating bacteria, some other crazy way. But if a zombie bites you, you become a zombie. Unfortunately, the zombie, yes, Jewel, this is a fact in zombie history. So the zombie is eating the brains, you know, brains, since all the zombie films since time evermore, right? So doing a good job eating the brain. But it's crazy. And it makes sense too, right? Because he was a genius. So getting the brain is growing back. Right. So we don't know what experiments he did on himself. But I love that they're doing this. And I love that you brought that up, Jennifer. I love that you brought that up, because a lot of movies, the issue was, right, even in the zombie movie that's out now that everybody loves, those zombies, there are some that are almost human. In certain games like Resident Evil and things like that, in certain Asian movies, the zombies are developing intellect because metamorphosis, as we know, in society and in the natural elements, we have evolution. So who's to say the zombies don't have evolution? There are very few rules that I get upset about people bending. One is about vampires. One is about werewolves. Now, let's just be clear. Let's be clear. Werewolves come out during the full moon, and vampires, you know, drink blood and sleep in coffins or sleep at night. They ain't got no business outside in the daylight. I do see these vampires out here in this show. They wear sunglasses, and I'm pretty sure they're wearing a whole lot of sunscreen. So I'm going to give a little bit of, you know, leeway there. But this literally, this my rules in horror and witches, you know, we give a little leeway to witches because you got a white witch, you got a black witch. So different things like that. But we don't play around with the werewolves and the vampires, okay? And that is my critique for today. Jewel, you have the mic.
Okay. I can't wait for us to do the podcast on the rules of horror, a la reminiscent of what we've done before. I would really love to see that happening sometime soon. I'm going to say that there is a long, long history of zombies changing the method in what a zombie is or is not. Because remember, we have subplots and sub rules within various different horror genres. For example, the monster we can retrospectively talk about who's the real monster, because Dr. Frankenstein is the monster. He creates an inanimate object corpse to come back to life. Technically, because it's made of multiple dead limbs and brought back to life, that is also a zombie, only he's not hungering for what we think zombies should in modern era. But remember, zombie and zombification is actually based on the hoodoo voodoo tradition of religious aspects brought from West Africa into the United States and other places around the world, utilizing an herb and the psychotropic, psychologically altering herb and magic that puts you in a zoning, uncontrolled trance. So, for example, Weekend at Bernie's, he's a zombie, but he doesn't eat anything and he doesn't want to eat anything. He's just an animated corpse that can be controlled. And then in I Am Legend with Will Smith, we have the zombies are getting smarter. Exactly what Nikita said, that you did not just raise your hand when I didn't raise my... Okay, go. Nikita, go ahead.
He was dead in Weekend at Bernie's. He was dead. He was just dead. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, that's the definition of zombies. According to, they literally use Obia. Obia, and I don't want to talk too much about Obia because my people will come and find me. But the religious aspect of Obia is bringing back the inanimate corpse to animation. And that's the beginnings in the historical idea of zombies. Zombies are actual real. And they're real in terms of religion. So we have altered it as humans in fantasy, but they're based on reality. But anyway, I'm just going to say, and if you don't believe me, we have zombies, not just in religion, but we have them in ants and termites and other, there's a reason why, we have the mycelium network of the mushrooms in the brains of things, bringing things into, because in termites and in ants and in some bees and wasps, there is a mushroom that will eat the brains of the insect and then make them a zombie, and they're flying around and they can't do anything because they're just zombies. And it's the mushroom brain spore thing. It's really weird. It's really cool though. It's amazing. Anyway. But what I was, see, now I don't even remember because the hand came out. I can't remember what I would say. Oh, in I Am Legend. Okay. In I Am Legend, they evolve. And I agree with Nikita in this, in the stories. They start, you know, for evolutionary purposes. What happens when you have a world full of zombies? Because in that story, you get bitten, you get turned, now you're a zombie. And you're still out here living. In I Am Legend, they're not dead. The virus turns them into a zombie. They never died. They haven't died yet, right? They just get turned into it. But they're not mindless anymore because they start evolving and start talking, right? In World War Z, they are smart. And they're smart because they don't go after individuals that seem to be suffering from health problems. In body snatcher type zombie movies, they're not very smart. They just want to proliferate. They just want to increase their numbers. In Night of the Living Dead, they just want brains. yeah, it's you know what? All of this should be happening in the afterpod. That's why y'all need to find out about the afterpod, because all the good conversation and the in-depth stories happen afterwards. And y'all need to check that out. So if you've been interested in what the rest of the conversation is, that's a little glimpse and a little foreshadowing of what you can hear in the afterpod afterwards. So check it out. Pay attention. We got to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Jennifer. And thank you for always being willing to show up and tell us what you thought of what we were discussing. Nikita?
Thank you, Jewel. My bad for digressing. And when we get in the afterpod, I'm just going to have to break out some facts about the mummies and zombies. And I believe that's where we come in with it. But, you know, it's cool, cool, cool. So, therefore, we may just have a show about something like that. I'm glad you said that, Jewel. All right. Thank you all for coming. This is Wednesday, What the Woe, Part 1, Episodes 1 through 4. The next episode comes out on Netflix September the 3rd. I hope you all watch Season 1 first and then watch Season 2, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we do. Great job, Netflix. Great job, Jenna Ortega. Great job, everyone in their acting. I think Pugsley is going to have time to grow on us, you know, because as we know, Pugsley has grown up and not out, which is what we're used to seeing. So I think that is a good aspect. And the mother talks about that, him growing like a leaf. I just love this. I love the whole thing. So hopefully when you all see it, you love it as much as we do, and you're talking about it. We'd like to see you talking about it. The more you talk about these movies that you see, these series that you see, the more likely that they get renewed. Thank goodness it has already been renewed ahead of time. And so we'll be seeing you again discussing that on September the 3rd. But meet us here next week, Saturday, 12 p.m., and let's see what we chat about then. All right? Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be great. We hope you enjoy the pod. We hope you're driving. We hope you're laughing. We hope you're talking. And we hope you're chatting. So have a great weekend from Blurred Words. Thank you, Jewel. Thank you, Jennifer. Ciao.
Bye.